It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or you can send us a text to that same number, 343-0106. The show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fabulous Seafood Shed. Get your butt to Ed's.
You're going to be getting yours to Ed's.
Are we going to be drifting over there for about 4 weeks? You're doing the remotes over there, Charlie. That's awesome, man. From we're splitting that time with Sean from 1 to 2 o'clock rather than having our shows on Wednesday nights at the Auburn basketball has bumped us.
Well, and it may be a good thing. Hearing the Scuttlebutt show in the middle of the day will be a new experience for a lot of people.
Yeah. Who's those crazy fools?
That's right.
Let's bring them on. We'll be there.
So you'll have the tirade and all the veterans news and everything else that you normally have.
Oh, yes. It'll be there. And the other thing that we're really going to be able to promote is this coming Saturday is the big pancake breakfast that Ed is going to have for our fallen local warrior here, Officer Tudor. And they're having a pancake sausage and whatever your drink is with it'll cost $10, and the total $10 is going to go to the Officer Tudor Memorial Fund with the police department.
Yeah, that's really unusual to have 100% of the money taken in.
Hell yeah,
go
yeah.
to the cause. Usually it's like 10 or 20%.
Well, guys, the Nick and Pete, they're stepping up. They're both children of veterans. Their fathers were both veterans, and they have continued to do that over the years. And all of our, we have great sponsors on this show, and we have, Kevin, what have you been? 15 years or something?
At least.
Yeah. I'm on my 36th year, so, and some of these guys have been with me 30 years.
Right.
Then they've been with you on a continuum with you. Yeah. But, and it's, we're blessed to have UJ Chevrolet come on board with us, which is your employer out there. And they have such an awesome facility, and it's hometown folks, baby.
And they're good people. They take care of the community.
Right,
When there's a need arises, they step up, no doubt. And
They're not in here to make all the money and do like the damn fair and suck it all out of here and haul it out of here on wheelbarrows and not come back into the local economy. So that's one of the reasons I like to participate with local owned companies.
Yeah, you might consider them a fly-by-night company. They only started in 1939.
Oh, so hell, they ain't even got on regular yet.
That's right. So they've been around a little while. So
there you go. But, they're good people, and they got one decent guy out there I know. I don't know. He's got something to do with the service department. But, I wouldn't say anything good about him because he's allowed to get the big head.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Oh, okay, Well, I'm sure we got some people that's going to call us and ask some outstanding questions about car problems.
And I've got a question to start with.
I said outstanding people. Now,
well,
Charlie,
I'm outstanding in a field somewhere.
Yeah, I know, man. Yeah. You look what they call them, scarecrows?
Well, we have a little bit of a cold snap predicted. I don't think we're going to see 25 or snow.
Right.
But we've had this conversation before, Kevin, but is there any advantage on those cold mornings? Is it too loud? On those cold mornings, is there any advantage to letting your car warm up for a few minutes other than the fact that the heater will start working?
Well, I keep reading articles about, you're damaging your car by cranking it up cold and letting it sit there and run,
Because that's what everybody did back in the day.
Well, the problem was that was kind of true back then because the car was running way too rich. It was loading up plugs. The choke wasn't opening properly.
Right. That's back in the day.
Right. That's not an issue anymore.
Nope.
Yeah, I have some terror tales about butterfly valves up on that. On that choke.
Yeah, and they were always an issue. And, a carburetor, it was black magic almost trying to make that thing work and keeping it working all the time.
It worked for a while. Good.
Yeah.
And it worked like crap.
So if it's 25 degrees, which I don't think we'll see, but if it does, you can just start your car and take off?
Well, yeah, you can. You know, it's I don't personally recommend it. I mean, I like cranking mine up and letting it run a little bit, let everything flow, get a little temperature in the oil, get a little temperature in the motor.
Get the oil circulating around.
Yeah, you know, it's the it's just like you are in the morning when it's good and cold and you get up and everything's stiff and not wanting to move and do like it's supposed to. You know, give it just a minute. You know, get up and walk around a little bit and let it warm up just a hair.
You can go. You're talking about getting the kinks out, man.
Right. You know.
And then stop hurting.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know. You know, it doesn't hurt a thing to let everything warm up just a little bit, you know.
Okay, but it's not something you got to feel like you have to.
You don't have to, but you can, you know, if you need to, get in, crank it up and go. Yeah. But, you know, most people, you know, don't have a garage to keep their car in or a carport to keep it under. So your windshield is going to be iced up anyway. You're going to have to sit there and figure out a way to get that thawed out.
Well, just run in there and get some hot water to throw that windshield.
Yeah, I was going to say hot water is not the
And if there's a
the
nick
answer.
Anywhere on that windshield.
The glass man told me to tell you that so that he gets some more business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I figured you had a commission thing going there.
That's right.
I'm going to get a commission off of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I found out the other morning that just – plain water coming out of the garden hose will get
that's
it
better.
Off your windshield.
Yeah. It's the best way. I mean, just, you know.
Just regular
anything
cold water.
Anything above freezing will thaw it pretty quick, you know. So
just don't do like my wife where she just turns on the wipers and it's going.
Yeah.
But it's not getting anything off, just tearing up the wiper blades.
There you go.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Charlie, Tom, and Kevin show.
Yep. Yeah. So it's, you know, if you start using your wipers too early and they're frozen to the windshield, you're going to rip the blades apart and all that anyway.
You're going to tear up a new set of blades. Yeah.
So give it a minute and let it warm up just a hair, and it won't hurt you.
Well, you know, you're talking about that. And this is changing the subject a little bit, but it's still a motor. I was talking to a small engine man the other day, and I told him about, look, I'm seeing all these, like, pressure washers and stuff. Have all of this new exotic choke mechanism on them and stuff, where you don't set the choke anymore and all. You just, you know, pull the switch or something and jerk.
Pull the cord
fire,
and crank.
Fire it up. But then the first thing you want to do is you want to put it in a bind, like trying to do pressure washing and stuff like that on that pump. And he says then it doesn't want to activate right. He said let it idle for a while you go, you know, put your pair of gloves on or go get you a cup of coffee or something and let it build up temperature in the motor and all, because all that stuff is activated by the heat.
Right.
You know? So I say, oh, okay. Yeah, I had to stop thinking about that.
It's just like anything else. You got to give it a minute to warm up and be ready to really sit there and work.
Now, you don't talk nasty, don't you?
Yeah.
But there you go, big man talking nasty on the show.
Yep. Well, you know, you get out there and you've – the pressure washer, it's wide open throttle, you know, working as hard as it can work, you know, when it's sitting there, using the thing. You know, you don't want to do that when the thing is stone cold.
Well, and that has to do also with all of your little small engines, you know, your weed eater and all that kind of stuff, too. Before you start bearing down on it and causing a lot of pressure running it wide open, let it warm up a little bit. And so all of the metals, you know, you got to remember, guys, all this stuff is a bunch of aluminum, so all that stuff has to get to a certain heat before it actually gets to the right size.
Right.
You know, and then once that metal and all heats up and that aluminum heats up, then things start to get in place and activate.
Exactly. Looks like we got a caller online. Caller, you with us?
Yeah, I just want to give you a tip on your windshield being iced up.
Yeah.
Back when I was working every day, I kept a bottle of rubbing alcohol in my vehicle all the time.
There
you go. If it had frost and ice, whatever, on that windshield, you could loosen the cap a little bit and just hold it up there and just squeeze it. And it'll melt that stuff off quick.
Yep. You the man, baby.
Yep, it'll sure do it.
Yep. And that's some cheap product, too, that rubbing alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make stuff. It's a de-icer, but it's made. That's what it is. You can tell by smelling it. When you spray it on it, it's alcohol.
That's what it is, brother.
I just thought I'd run that by you.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, that's called experience.
Good tip.
The Lord let me turn 84 the other day, and he put up with me a long time, but I praise him for it.
Amen. Well, don't you slow down.
I ain't y'all show.
Don't slow down, because I'll run over you.
All right,
buddy. Have a good one. Okay. Right.
Thank you. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of the windshield washer solvents, that's all they are is you know, like an alcohol-based, you know, product that it helps de-ice it whenever you squirt it on there.
There you go.
Looks like you run to the end of our first segment. We're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49. And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And speaking of text, we have James from Florida. Do you still have to wait for the wait to start light while cranking a diesel? Usually they will go ahead and fire up, but if you get into some really, really cold weather, I would recommend letting the wait light time out on it, because it's just warming those glow plugs up. But the technology that they've got on the glow plug systems on these things nowadays is way farther advanced than what they used to be.
Yeah, they're a lot better than what they used to be, but for the benefit of the people that don't know, understand what maybe a glow plug is, maybe you could cover that a little bit.
Yeah, it glow plug is basically just a hot point in the combustion chamber in a diesel. You know, with a diesel, you don't have a spark to ignite. It's ignited by compression fuel and just the pressure.
Right.
So it has to. It really helps to have a heat source there to help it ignite. Once it's running, the glow plugs really aren't doing anything anymore. But just getting it to hit that first time,
Get cranked.
And they've done. You know, the technology with the diesels have come so far along. They're so much easier. They crank like a gas burner now,
pretty much.
So, but we do have a caller online. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
What do for you? Yeah, this is Don. I got a 2013 GMC pickup.
Yeah.
And I guess 6 months or so ago, I started getting a warning on my dash. Stabilitrack, traction control, or whatever is off.
Yeah.
And I'd get another thing that says check it. And then it would go away for 3 weeks, and then it might pop back on and then go away for 2 weeks and pop back on its own right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't sense anything different whatsoever. And like I said, it's been 6 months I've been doing this.
Right.
What do you think I got there?
What year did you say it was?
2013.
13, yeah. And you don't see an ABS light or anything like that?
Actually, yes, ABS light's on too.
Okay.
It all comes together.
Yeah, okay. More than likely you have either you could have just a low brake fluid situation going on, or it could be a wheel speed sensor failing somewhere in the in the truck. You have, I believe on that one, you have two in the rear and two in the front. Some of them just operate off of one in the rear, but I believe on that particular truck it has two. The best place to start is while the light is still on or has been on recently. It's to get a code read on it and see what codes are set on it, and that would give us an indication of which direction to go.
Okay.
You know, if it's got a wheel sensor failing at times, which is kind of what it sounds like, it should have a code set for that sensor. So it should give you a direction to go. Yeah.
So what you're saying also is don't go to a box store and let them take one of those code checkers and clear all the signals out of there.
Right. But, you know, and the problem with that also is a lot of those box stores, they can read the engine codes, but they can't read the chassis and ABS codes.
Right.
So you may have to get it to a dealer or, you know, a shop that has the right equipment to check it properly.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for calling in. And we have another caller. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, sir. I appreciate you taking my call. This is GMC night. I have a 2005 GMC, and I'm having trouble with my gauge cluster. I got an oil pressure gauge that's pegged all the way to the right, key on, engine on, key off, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And odometer error. And I know that they have some trouble with those clusters, but I need some guidance about what direction to go.
You know, the gauge is, you sound like you probably have two problems. You know, the gauge itself is probably the stepper motor for the gauge is probably bad. Now, the odometer reading error, that's a whole different deal. You know, something in there is not agreeing. Like either you have, it could just be a failure in the cluster itself, but something may have been changed, either the ECM, which is the engine control module, a transmission control. I believe that one's got a separate one, but I'm not sure about it. The cluster could have been changed, or the body control module may have been changed, and one of those VIN numbers doesn't match, and it'll pop up an error code. And that's one of the ways they keep people honest on the mileage on these vehicles, is all the programming and the VIN information all has to match. If it doesn't, then it pops that error message up. So
I see. But did you say it? Now, just for a little background, it is an 05. I'm the second owner, but I bought it when it was just a little over a year old, had about 10,000 miles on it.
Right.
It's got about 58,000 now. I'm saying about because the error message started throwing about a week ago, so I'm not exactly sure what the 58 and change would be.
Right.
But nobody's ever changed the ECM or anything like that. I've never had any trouble with that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, you know, and that being said, I would probably be inclined to say that it's in the cluster itself. I would want to look at codes and see if, make sure everything else is functioning properly. If all the other modules are communicating and functioning like they should, you know, you're going to have to get a cluster repaired. More than likely, it's going to be a problem with the cluster itself on your error message on the odometer as well. You may be better off. The only problem is you have to pull that cluster out for us to repair it. You have to pull the cluster out, send it off, have it repaired, and get it back, especially if we don't know for sure what the mileage is.
Right.
You know, because,
well, is that what you would recommend? You know, I didn't really know what direction to go here in Mobile, Alabama. A friend of mine told me there was a guy that was repairing those clusters, but
yep.
It's my understanding he's kind of faded away from the business, and I just didn't know what direction to go.
Yeah, he left town. No one run him out of town. He was a good guy, but he used to agree. He was a gauge doctor. He did a good job. He did that for quite a few years and fixed a lot of them for us. But at this point, we don't have anybody here in town that's doing that. But probably the best bet would be to, you know, get it to a dealer, get them to pull the cluster and send it out for repairs, and that way they can check the odometer part as well, repair the gauges in it, and get it back and get beyond that point. Even if it's not the cluster causing your odometer error message, you can eliminate that because you've got to get the oil gauge fixed anyway.
Gotcha. And certainly that would be something you guys could handle, correct?
Yes. Yes, we can handle that.
That's the way to do it.
I really appreciate your help with that. I'll be in touch.
Yeah, take that to UJ and let those guys fix it, and that way you'll have a factory warranty on it.
Yes, sir. That's important, too.
Yes, sir, if you go drive them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we can't afford them if we don't drive them till the wheels.
It'll outlive me, probably.
Don't you know? There you go.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for calling in. And, you know, that's especially that O, probably 1 to 5, 6, even in 07 range. Man, those are some bulletproof vehicles. We had very little trouble. Yeah.
How long will his truck be out of commission?
Well, I mean, we get it in, we send it off.
Take the cluster and send it off and get it back.
You know, if we overnight it, it's you're going to be 4 days, easy. You know, yep. Once they get it, they'll fix it and they'll send it right back. But
but that's bulletproof.
It's still, it's still time consuming because you got to get it out, get it sent off, and
plus you got to get another vehicle to drive in the meantime.
Yeah, hopefully he's got something else he can drive for a few days, and that would definitely help him out for sure.
There you go. But, yes, sir.
You know, and that's a fairly common failure in those trucks is the gauges. So. You know, it doesn't really surprise me. The odometer error message, you know, out of the blue like that is something that's fairly uncommon. We don't see that very often.
Well, back in the day, a lot of components like that, we could order a rebuilt one from out of town and get it in and put it into a vehicle now. But with all the electronics and the way everything is dialed in together and dialed together, we can't do that with those pieces now, can we?
You can
cluster deal and all.
You can, and that's why I mentioned the part about the mileage. If we knew what the mileage was, and within a few hundred miles, we could order a reman cluster and put it in and program it to the vehicle and put the mileage in it.
Okay.
But we have to know what the mileage is.
Because
they'll send up red flags because they get the cluster back and they'll get the mileage out of it. And if it's
you have no way of reading that though when that cluster gets in that shape.
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. You know, and we could check it and see once we got
there.
So
if you can find the mileage,
right,
then you could just order one and have it here the next day.
Yeah.
Well, okay, there you go.
Yeah, so we can save them some time if we can retrieve that mileage out of it. But,
right.
It's just that's just one of those things you don't know until you get there.
You know, it's one of those things. My vehicle's broke down. Well, I got to look at it.
Yeah.
Before I can tell what's wrong with it.
Well, I have people all the time. Well, how much is this going to cost me? So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I knew that, I'd know what. If I knew what was wrong with it, I could tell you.
There you go. Yeah.
But sometimes we don't have that luxury. But,
there you go. Okay.
Sound like we're going to take a break and let you hear from our fine sponsors, and we'll be back.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or send us a text to that same number. But we do have a caller online here, which is Mr. Glenn Hilton from Transmission Magician. Glenn, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
You know what? Good. It's just nice to have two doctors in the house.
Well, I don't think I fall into that category rather well, but anyway.
That's all right. You're still a transmission guru.
Well, I'm the doctor. He's a magician, right?
There you go. He's a magician.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
He probably makes more money than you do. He's a magician.
There you go.
But, hey, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is that we've had some problems with certain vehicles, and you might relate us to some of them that, you know, like we were talking the other day about some of the vehicles that had a problem with torque converters. But now I've talked with Kevin about those vehicles, and Kevin said, General Motors, if it's a General Motors vehicle, we warrant it to whatever the – what is it?
Well, it depends on what year it is. A powertrain warranty
is
for 5 years, 60,000 miles, or if it's a 2015 or older, it's 5 years or 100,000 miles.
Okay.
But, you know, we just have to look at the warranty information on that particular vehicle.
There you go.
See what it is covered for. But, we have seen some issues with them, no doubt. But, they step up and try to take care.
One of the things that I thought I would ask you is if you know of some other vehicles, and some of the people that's listening to us out there might have those types of vehicles and may need to be thinking about the problems or something. If you know a specific vehicle that maybe had some torque converter problems that are messing with them, or, you know, we could even have a bad oil cooler or transmission cooler that's leaking or something. What are you seeing in your industry?
Well, a lot of the different manufacturers, you know, you mentioned GM, and GM, they do have their own fair share of converter issues. But Ford does. We're seeing Chryslers coming in with converter problems, even some Toyotas. As they seem to gain more of the market, they too are starting to show some issues that, you know, many years back we didn't see as many of. But not all of these vehicles with their torque converter concerns are easily remedied, meaning that when the problem begins to manifest and it brings the customer into the shop, it typically has already began to create internal problems.
Right.
You know, but when you and I talked the other day about on some of the GM models, if you catch it early enough, you can address that converter before it becomes detrimental to the transmission. And again, if it's under warranty, by no means do you want to have anyone touch it. You would want to touch base with the GM people and make sure that you know that they may pick up the tab, and that would be all the better. But right now, Tom, across the board, we're seeing a lot of converter issues. And then again, I might add to this while people are listening to the show, a lot of times we have people come into the shop who, from one person or the other, they believe they have a torque converter that's a problem, and in fact it's not a converter at all. It could be an ignition miss. You know, people push their tune-ups well into the 150,000-200,000 realm now. It's amazing cars can run as well as they do. Injectors partially restricted, fuel filters stopped up, that all cause engine performance issues that mimic a torque converter problem.
Right.
So, you know, it's not always just torque converters, but, you know, quite a bit out there that's, you know, needs to be looked at anyway.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I'll get your opinion on this, but my personal opinion on a lot of our torque converter problems we're having industry-wide is that we're asking these converters to do way more than what we used to with our lockup systems on them. They're not just on or off. They're on, but they're not totally locked up. So you're creating heat. You're working that one little clutch an awful lot.
You're absolutely right. And the lining that GM pioneered, I think with 3M, if I remember correctly, when they did come on with the PWM, as we call it, pulse width modulated clutch systems, it was obviously a tremendous lining. But even with that said, like you're saying, we're asking, or they are asking, an awful lot of that one little clutch.
Right.
And I think that's why we're starting to see more of the problems reappear. In the 80s, when the TCC systems, as we called it, torque converter clutch systems, appeared, and they were being shoved down everybody's throat because of fuel economy, we had a lot of problems. And then they kind of just disappeared, and now they've come back. And I think you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. You know, and the reason they're doing it and not letting it totally lock up is because, you know, most of our manufacturers are doing cylinder deactivations and stuff like this. So you get to running down the road, and it goes into this V8, and it goes into V4 mode. If you had it totally locked up, you would get a lot more feel of that, through the vehicle if you had it totally locked up. If they can isolate the fire impulses from the transmission, you know, some, it will actually smooth the whole car out and just makes the whole driving experience better, as long as everything's working right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. You know, they've, and honestly, if they ever totally fix any of the torque converter issues, I think they'd put my transmission man out of work because, you know, we just don't see internal failures much anymore.
You're absolutely right. It is the torque converter that is bringing on a lot of the internal failures that that will keep your tranny man rather busy, and happy for that matter.
But all that being said, Glenn, what we're seeing is we have a tendency, just like some people call us here, and I've done it too, we get a light on our dash, and, you know, the car still runs good or truck still runs good. It's not missing. Mm-hmm. You know, we look for oil pressure or we look for oil lights or we look for temperatures. We don't see any changes in that, and hell, we just keep driving it. Well, correct. I think the same thing occurs when we start getting that little flutter or something in that torque converter, and we don't. Oh, man, it's gonna be a little, must be a little rough road or something. You know, I'm running over some ruts in the road, and when we drive it until the damn thing breaks,
that's right.
And by the time it breaks, then we've tore up a transmission.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
People are just scared to death of transmissions and, you know, the potential costs that are associated with them. So they tend to ignore that. And, you know, if they did come in earlier, regardless who you take it to, they may save themselves a lot of grief and a lot of expense. But you're right. People just keep on keeping on with them.
I think one of the things that we're seeing also in your industry, it's kind of overall in the car industry. I mean, let's look at it on the paint side to relate to it. Back in the day, you could buy paint to paint a car for, $50, $80. Mm-hmm. And then you were getting $300 to $500 paint jobs. So now the paint pigments and stuff have gone up to like $800 to $1,000 for enough paint to paint a car. So, I mean, naturally, you got to go up to $2,000. $2,500, $3,000 or so to paint a car. Well, the same thing's happening in your case. I used to stock transmission parts. And, you know, you'd have a few little old pieces. I mean, you could buy a complete transmission rebuild kit for somewhere around $150.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but then just about a one-eyed man could build it if he'd ever pulled one apart before. But now it's kind of like a technician on an automobile. You just about have to have an engineering degree to build one of those transmissions. It's unbelievable, all the parts and everything is in it. And then when you go buying the parts, you're looking at $2,000 worth of parts.
You can drop a lot of money into it, especially if the job's going to be done correctly. Yes.
Well, you can't do it, Glenn, unless you can warrant it. So therefore, you're not going to do it. Hey, if I ask, excuse my French, okay?
No.
You know, you can't do that. I mean, if you're going to keep a business and keep your doors open, then you got to do it right so that you know when it goes out, it's not going to be a CB or, you know, or comeback.
You're right. Absolutely right. There's only really one way to make a repair, and that is to go all the way. And we explain that to customers all the time. You know, Tom, you take a customer that comes in and they've got, say, 100,000 miles and, you know, they lose reverse. And the question goes, well, can't you just go in and fix reverse? Well, sure we could, but with 100,000 miles, there's typically already other things waiting in the wings to begin to show themselves as well.
You fix and lose the rest of it because all that particles and pieces of those components in there are floating around the system, and they've already impregnated a lot of those clutches and things and those components. So, you know, it just don't work that way.
No, it don't.
Yeah. I mean, transmission is, to me, is a damn miracle to start with. That they would make something that sophisticated to do all of the work and labor that it does.
Well, indeed. And even now, as they've moved into 8 and 10 speeds, you would really be taken back with what they have been able to accomplish and do so in such a small package. These are very smart people who are putting these things together now.
Yeah, I remember going to the 6-speed front wheel drive that's in like the Acadia and that and Traverse when they first come out, and they showed us a stack of the internal components that made up, you know, all 6 gears and reverse. Yep. And, you know, we're talking about a stack that's probably 8-10 inches tall. And
it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, how did they get that many gears out of that little stack, you know? Yeah. So we had a Turbo 350, only had 3 forward gears in reverse that was that big or bigger.
Back in the day also, where you had a transmission parts warehouse, if they had
$350,000 worth of inventory, they could cover every piece and component that the transmission shop would ever need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over $3 or $4 million worth of stuff now. It's unbelievable.
It is, but it's big business. You know, there's a couple of major players in the aftermarket side of the game that sells the transmission parts, and mm-hmm. you know, the small guys are suffering, and they're falling to the wayside because they don't have that money for inventory.
Yep,
right.
And, that's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, your local transmission parts supplier, they're kind of going to the wayside, you know, because they just can't keep up. You know, it's just way too much money. Yeah.
Well, it's the same way with just regular auto parts. I can remember the day when if you had $200,000 worth of auto parts, then you were cool, man. You could cover just about everything you had except a W product, which is warehouse,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then now, you know, I was talking to Billy over there at Advance the other day, and they got $9 million worth of inventory.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah.
$9 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Steele would tell you he doesn't have everything that he needs.
Oh, no. He has to get stuff out of warehouses every day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Glenn, why don't you get you a hold on just a little bit. We're going to bring you back after the break, but looks like it's time for us to take a break here. And we're going to let everybody hear from our sponsors. We'll be back with Glenn shortly.
Well, when I was just a little bitty kid, I remember one time Mama said, Daddy sent you all of his love from Bristol Bay. I didn't understand till I was grown why my daddy didn't spend a little time at home. Instead of running around the country that away. Whoa, I'm looking at the world through a windshield. And I see everything in a little bit different light. I got a sweet little thing I'm a wanting to see in Nashville. And I'm down around Dallas, little old south tonight.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Yeah, welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. Have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And we've got Glenn from Transmission Magician on the phone with us. But, Glenn, we got a Dave from Gulf Shores here sent us a text. It says, wait a second, I thought CVT transmissions have fewer parts and that they were going to take over the transmission industry here for all our manufacturers. But have y'all gotten into the CVT transmissions very much so far?
We have, and they do have less moving parts, but that technology is still not proven itself. So, you know, I don't see them taking, you know, the CVTs taking over the transmission world, if you will.
Right.
And it'll never be able to fill the gap for your SUVs and your trucks as I see it, because they're just not that durable of a unit.
Yeah.
But in all fairness, the people such as Nissan and Subaru, they're building a very good product.
Mm-hmm.
And we see very few of them. The Jatco company, which supplies the Nissans, we're seeing a lot of them, a lot of failures, which typically average around 100,000 miles.
Right.
And they're rather expensive to repair or replace either way.
Mm-hmm.
But we are seeing more, I guess, to answer the gentleman's question, will they take over the rest of the industry? I don't ever foresee that.
Right. Not
currently, anyway.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Yeah, they're... They do well for the little cars, but, you know, when you get into someone that's going to pull their boat or a trailer of some sort, you know, I just don't see them being the answer to that.
Yeah.
You know, now, that being said, that the technology has come light years in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years that they've been out running around. You know, they're much better, and they give you, you know, with programming and electronic control, they give you a feel of a almost normal transmission now, to where they were kind of strange to drive there for a while. Yeah.
Well, you know what, guys? All that being said, both of y'all are still in the industry, which I'm not. But I understand from hearing people talking about these CVTs is the fact that there's no shortcut on any of the parts. There's mm-hmm. You can't find anybody that's got a cheaper part.
No.
Or more, not, you know, not, well, more economical. Nothing is ever cheap.
Right.
But
So, you know, you've got to buy the specific component for that particular vehicle, or otherwise it's not going to work right at all.
Correct. There is no shortcuts on that. There's no buying the bargain basement part to save a little money. That you go all the way with that, or you don't mess with it.
Right.
Because it is a complicated unit, and it is it's rather expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, shops just don't want to see it again.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's one of the big things too, is, you know, once you put your hands on that transmission, it's yours, you know.
Indeed.
So, yeah, you have to make sure that you're putting a quality product out there that you're not going to have come back in your shop with a failure, with a customer staring at you, not happy. You know, they're not happy when they write that check when they're done, but if they have to bring it back, they're sure enough not happy. So,
exactly. I agree.
You know, but and one of the things for sure you definitely got to be careful with on the CVT transmissions is the fluid you're using. You know, it has to be the fluid for that transmission. You know, it's you got to be careful. You better use the right stuff, and it's not cheap. So
no, it's not. We just as an example, we had a Subaru today that just our cost was $285.
Yeah.
For the fluid for this thing.
Yeah.
That would buy an awful lot of Dextron 3, Dextron 5.
Right.
GM products and a lot of the others. So that is a lot of money, and it does have to be very specific to the make and the model of that car so that it works correctly.
Exactly. Glenn, looks like we got a caller that has a transmission question. So let's get Jeff online here with us and see what Jeff has to say tonight.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I've got a 2006 Toyota Tacoma, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I've just learned enough to get myself in trouble here, but I go out on these websites and these guys are talking about changing the transmission fluid and doing all this work on it themselves. And so I ask my mechanic about it and talk about maybe having him do it because the vehicle's 12 years old, it's got 120,000 miles on it. And he said, well, I called Toyota and they said, don't even touch it. So I'm trying to figure out what the truth is here with respect to any kind of maintenance on this transmission.
Well, Glenn, I'll pass that one along to you and let you answer that one.
We naturally have an opinion, but we'd like to hear from the magician.
Well, I probably repeat this at least a few times a day, it seems, about changing the fluid, and it doesn't matter what the make of the vehicle is. But in your case, our rule of thumb is that if you've already reached that 100,000 mile mark and beyond, you're treading on dangerous waters by servicing it at that point. In fact, we like to see you service one around every 50 or so thousand miles.
Okay.
But when you reach that 100,000, leave it alone. Just drive the wheels off of it, keep on with it, and let it run its course. And even if you are experiencing a problem, as long as it's nothing major, leave it alone, and because if you change the fluid, you frankly will just make whatever problem you have even worse. And even if you don't have a problem, oftentimes you'll create one when you've started accumulating a lot of miles. And so, you know, at our shop, we repeat that daily because we have so many that come in with a lot of miles, and one reason or another, they choose to want to change their fluid, and it does create troubles.
Okay. Yeah. That's I was gonna say that, you know, the manufacturer doesn't recommend it, so I've just kind of left it alone. But when I'm watching other guys talk about doing it, I thought, well, I might as well ask the question. So,
indeed, start early. The next vehicle you get, start early in its life, and then from that point moving forward, you'll do real well to just look at it as a preventive maintenance regimen, and you'll save yourself a lot of money in the long haul. Just don't wait till you've already got a lot of miles on it.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome. But thanks for calling in. But you know, I have to agree. I'm not a big fan of changing one once it gets past that century mark, unless it's been, you know, serviced, you know, along. You know, I've done that on one of my own vehicles. You know, working fine, no issues whatsoever. Did a transmission flush on it. Let one of the vendors come in that was trying to sell some product, talked me into doing it. I went ahead and did it, and I knew the first time it shifted through the gears that I had messed up.
Yeah.
And it lasted about a month. So,
oh, Lord.
Yeah, so I knew I'd made a mistake by doing it when the first time I'd run it down the road. But
there you go.
You know, and it happens, you know, and it can happen any time, but
it does.
You know, and we have, and I say I'm not a big fan of fluid changes and that kind of stuff, but one thing that we have seen with some of our 8-speed stuff, you would swear that 8-speed is tore up from top to bottom when you drive it sometimes, and it's all centered around the torque converter not applying properly. And they have actually changed fluids that they're using, and it is fixing it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's good.
You know, it's been, we have not seen, we've pulled pans and that have not found metal in the pan, any kind of debris in the pan, and doing the fluid exchange with the latest and greatest Mobil 1 synthetic, and it is correcting our converter problems that we've had with 8-speeds. But seems to I don't know, I was a little surprised. I didn't expect it, but it seemed to take care of it. But Glenn, I think we're coming up close to the end of the show. Why don't you give everybody your address and phone number and where they can find you?
Well, sure. Thank you. Our physical address is 5753 Knox Road out in the Tillman's Corner area, and our number is 666-0730. And, of course, I'm married to that place, so you can reach me Monday through Friday, 8 till 5:30.
You're a small businessman. You know it.
You own a business. What do you expect?
Got me.
But, Glenn, I appreciate you calling in. And,
thank you, buddy.
I'm sure you helped out some of our listeners. And
I hope.
We're going to take off and be back next Monday. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show, and we'll be back.